support comes from Tub Cove. With over 49 years of remodeling bathrooms, Tub Cove can help simplify the process, offering tub and shower replacements and full bathroom remodels. Local and family-owned, with a showroom in Redmond. Designs and information at tubcove.com.
You're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. Here's a global trend that's setting off alarm bells for economists and world leaders. Declining birth rates. People are having fewer babies. A recent study in The Lancet predicted plunging birth rates will mean that by 2050, three-quarters of countries will be producing too few new humans to replace their populations. After rising for centuries, Earth's human population is expected to peak in the next 40 or 50 years. Now, some environmentalists are optimistic about this shift away from overpopulation fears of the 20th century. But a lot of countries with advanced economies around the world, Taiwan, South Korea, Russia, Germany, Italy, and many more, see disaster on the horizon. They're adopting pro-natalist policies to try to encourage citizens to reproduce and stave off economic decline. Now, in many parts of the world, this is heavily intertwined with anti-immigrant policies, but that is a discussion for another day. I just want to flag that. The thing is, policies trying to encourage fertility generally haven't worked. Even Scandinavian nations, renowned for their generous social spending, are now seeing falling birth rates. Throughout history, better access to contraception and greater educational and economic opportunities for women generally correlate with people having fewer kids. But today, for many people of childbearing age, it comes down to a simple calculus of happiness. Will having kids make you happy? Does reproducing add to your overall well-being? It's a big question, and we've decided to tackle it today on Soundside with your help. I've been welcoming your voicemails at 206-221-3213. That's 206-221-3213. And we've assembled a panel to tackle the question. Dr. Stefan Blanford is the executive director of the Children's Alliance. Dr. Amy Blackstone is a sociology professor at the University of Maine and the author of Child Free by Choice. And Dana Guy is the executive director of Program for Early Parent Support, or PEPS, in Seattle. Thank you, everybody, for being here.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Glad to be here.
So I'm going to start with sort of a going around the horn here. Some of you in the conversation have children. Some of you don't. I am not a parent, although full disclosure, I have tried to have children and I may try again. I'm still thinking about it. So I'd like to ask all of you what your decision to become a parent or to live child-free was like. And Stefan, could I start with you? How did you approach that decision?
Sure. I'm happy to launch into this conversation. My wife and I made a decision that we would go for about 5 years after we got married before we would entertain the idea of having a child. And during that time, we traveled. Our incomes increased quite a bit as a result of, you know, just working away. And it was important for us as two adults who came from poverty, both of us experienced a lot of poverty in our youth, that we established a basis by which we could raise children. And at the end of that 5 years, I think it wasn't a flip of a coin, but it was pretty, we could have gone one direction or the other. We decided to have a child, and she will be 21 years old next month. And we're really happy to have made that decision.
Yeah. Happy birthday to your child. Dr. Blackstone, how did you approach the decision?
So my husband Lance and I have been married for almost 30 years. We were high school sweethearts and got married pretty young. And we both assumed for a long time that we would have kids one day. I joke that I said for many years, not yet, I'm too young. Realized at 35 that I was still saying I am too young, and discovered that if I became pregnant, then my pregnancy would qualify as a geriatric pregnancy. So probably I wasn't too young at that point. We'd had conversations on and off over the years, and at that point really dug in and realized we have to make a decision. And the short answer is there wasn't a compelling enough reason for us to say yes. And we both feel very strongly that children need and deserve parents who want them. And for that and many other reasons that we can get into, we didn't do it. We're happy with our decision. We are happy for our friends who intentionally and happily made a different decision. And I'll leave it there for now. And if we could get into other specifics, I'm happy to share more.
Yeah. So far, I just want to call out, we're hearing some things about, you know, household economics, how stable financially a household is that weigh into these decisions. I'm hearing philosophical questions and also, you know, these questions of happiness are also, of course, a part of it. Dana Guy, how did you approach this decision? How do you and your family decide whether or not to have kids?
Yeah, so my husband and I met living in a mountain town. We were just having a lot of fun and dated for a pretty long time before we got married. But once we got married, actually ended up starting a family pretty quickly after that. And I think part of that was because we had those really fun, adventurous years where we got to do really what we wanted to do. My kiddos now are 13 and 10, and I have to say, I wouldn't have known this in the early days, but actually right now we do all of those same fun things that we loved to do when we first met. Like that's really a big part of what we do as a family. So it was something we both wanted to do. We also both had siblings. And so the idea of having multiple kids appealed to us, but certainly at two, I was like, okay, we're pretty maxed out. And also just enjoying, and just enjoying the phase of life that we're in. We're in a pretty nice sweet spot with our kids right now.
So we have folks on the call that have made different decisions in their own lives, and they also work in this space, you know, and in talking to people about these decisions and how to support people in the decisions that they made. In King County here in Seattle, where we are, the number of children has decreased for the first decade since the 1980s. So people here, for whatever reasons, and they are myriad, are making the decision to have fewer children. Dana, you work with parents in the area, and I'm curious if you have seen this dip in the work that you do and also what people are saying about their decisions to have kids.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think so. The work my organization does is to support and connect parents, and we do that through peer support groups. So from the start, when the organization started 40 years ago, it was about bringing parents out of isolation to prevent child abuse. And if we've evolved and changed, and we offer support now at different parenting phases. We have a program now for parents of adolescents and teens, which is another really tricky time. I would say the need for support for parents is just growing. There's just additional issues that make it challenging. We're more disconnected than ever before. Isolation was already a problem before the pandemic. And so what we do is really simple, but very powerful, which is bring people together so that they know they're not alone. And I think that's just such a big piece of parenting. People go into it and it's very hard to explain the actual challenges or the shift in your identity. But when you bring people together with other folks. So yeah, we're not seeing a dip in interest in that. Certainly the pandemic had definitely had a big impact because for 40 years, we always brought people together in real life. And so there's been shifts to virtual and now we're making our way back. Probably our biggest challenge at the moment is finding enough folks to lead our groups. So we have volunteers who facilitate this connection. And that's a little bit like trying to get folks to go back to the office, trying to get that ramped up in person has been a big post-pandemic challenge for us.
And it's not just about supports, right? I mean, Amy, you wrote about being child-free, which is a choice that you have made. And we've mentioned already that in Scandinavian countries with these robust social safety nets, they are starting to see a decline in birth rate, even with really wonderful paid time off and other supports. What do you hear from others who have made this choice? I mean, what are the reasons behind why more people are choosing to go child-free?
Well, interestingly, in my research, support is one of the pieces that many people have mentioned. So, well, we don't see that bearing out if we compare Western nations that have those supports, the child care subsidies and the good parental leave policies that we don't have in the U.S. People that I've interviewed do cite the lack of such policies in the U.S. as one reason.
And there is a research, surveys that show that people in the United States are not having as many children in some cases right. as they would like to. And, you know, this kind of lack of support is cited.
Yeah. Yeah. And sociologist Jennifer Glass, I have to give a shout out to her, has also shown that that is a huge contributor to parental happiness and differences in parental happiness in the U.S. compared to other Western nations. So it's significant. Whether it would change birth rates or not, I can't say, but it definitely would increase parents' happiness in the U.S. But that aside, other reasons that I hear from people who have opted out of parenthood include, interestingly, things that parents cite as reasons for opting into parenthood. So we share many of the same reasons for our choice. Child-free couples talk about the importance of wanting to nurture their relationship with each other, and a concern that adding additional parties to their household might in some ways change that relationship. And of course it will. But parents talk about, if you look at the research, parents talk about the importance of relationships and what, you know, what they imagine their relationships with their children to be. So we both support the importance, imagine the importance of relationships as key to our decision. Thinking about the future and imagining an ideal future is also something that parents and non-parents both cite for their reasons about either opting in or opting out. In the case of the child-free, it often, at least in the U.S. and in my own research, has to do with things like a concern about the carbon footprint left behind by new people that are birthed in nations like the U.S. We can't compare. It's not apples to apples. The carbon footprint of a new baby born in Niger, which has the highest birth rate in the world, is oodles different from the carbon footprint of babies in the U.S. So that's a concern of people. And I would say climate and the economy are the two things that Gen Zers are screaming about, and policymakers don't seem to be listening. But that's what's coming up more and more when you talk to people about their decisions around parenthood or specifically non-parenthood today.
We received a voicemail from Amy in Ferndale that touches on some of what you just mentioned, Amy, and I would love to get this other Amy's input here.
My kids are grown now. I'm in my 50s, and they are young adults, and they're fabulous people. The world is better off because they're in it. But if I were starting over right now, if I were their age, I would definitely choose not to have children, and that is because I have so much trepidation about the world as it will be in 20, 30, 40 years. It's all, my kids are already going to be in it, but I don't think that I would choose today to take those kinds of risks with someone else's life.
Stefan, I saw you nodding a little bit as Amy's voicemail was playing. I mean, certainly becoming a parent is a huge decision. How do you think people today are balancing the precarities of the world, the issue of climate change, as Amy Blackstone was bringing up, when it comes to bringing a new human into the world?
Yeah, it's a great question. I, you know, have small sample size in that I have friends that have children, friends that don't have children. And I hear that sentiment frequently shared that it seems like the world is unraveling in some ways, and the danger of bringing a child into that world. I think about it a little bit differently in that as a parent, you have an obligation to be positive, to be optimistic about children. It kind of is a requirement of being a parent. You can't be pessimistic about their life chances. I do spend a lot of time thinking about keeping the lineage going and thinking about my parents and what their expectations of me were. But I think, you know, ultimately everyone has to make their own choice. And anyone that's paying attention nowadays has to look at some of the information that's coming forward about the tenuousness of life on this planet and wonder if it makes sense to bring a child into the world.
Amy Blackstone, any reflection on that?
Yeah, so I just wanted to pick up on a point that Dr. Blanford made about thinking about lineage and his family, because this is a point that many of the Black child-free couples and singles that I spoke with in my research raised, and this sort of complex question for them about an awareness of the really dark history and present that we have in this nation of eugenic policies designed to erase particular races. And we can see it in our immigration policies. We can see it in many of the reproductive justice conversations that are happening today and have happened in our past. And that's a piece of the conversation about the child-free so-called choice that often gets missed, is that while many of us have fought for our choice to opt out of parenthood, we can't forget that there are also many who have fought for their choice to opt in to parenthood. And that needs to be part of the conversation too.
Yeah. And there's also a huge differential in motherhood mortality between Black women and white women, for example, and also infant survivability rates and everything that is, of course, kind of hanging over this question when we talk about choices and right. what kind of risks people undertake when they make those choices. I want to talk a little bit more about the stigma that can attach to somebody who chooses not to have children. We did receive a voicemail from Allison in Redmond, who's kind of keeping us honest in this way. Allison pointed out that we used a term childless instead of child-free when we were promoting this segment last week. And Allison called us out on that.
Oftentimes when I hear the word childless, it makes me feel like it's a deficit, like I've lost something, I don't have something, I'm less than because of it. And I think child-free really rephrases it as like a decision and an ownership piece that I've taken. So I would just love to throw out the idea of child-free instead of childless as a way to positively characterize people who are making the decision to not have kids.
Amy, any reflection on the language choice that Allison was calling us out on?
Yeah, thank you, Allison, for doing the work. As is evident by the title of my book, I also prefer the term child-free to reflect my positive choice to opt out of parenthood. It's also important, as somebody who does research on this topic, to disentangle the choice that I made from the circumstance of a person who is a non-parent but didn't choose that circumstance. Because if we're looking at the life course of each of those circumstances, it's likely and I think reasonable to guess that those might be different paths. They're certainly different experiences. In one case, a person is living the life of their choosing, and in the other, a person is coming to terms with a circumstance that they didn't choose. I will spoiler alert, give you the end of the story, which is that in both cases, people end up in their old age happy. They tend to fare well, but it's a different journey to get to that place. And so it is an important distinction to make. And for many people who've opted out of parenthood, the term child-free is a better and preferred descriptor.
I also just want to call out that there are other ways to have children in your life other than having biological kids. Stefan or Dana, do you have any reflections on, you know, adoption, fostering, other types of trends that maybe we're seeing in Washington State or in the Seattle area?
I would add mentorship. I think mentorship is a critically important element that allows children and young people to influence your life and for you to influence theirs. I've seen an increase in the number of people who are looking for that instead of taking on the responsibility of parenting. And as a former executive director of a Boys and Girls Club and a Big Brothers, Big Sisters, I know that the relationship between a mentor and a mentee is beneficial to both parties.
I think we've talked a lot about sort of the mindset that parents have to have a kind of an inherent optimism about the future. We've talked about the limitations and the other issues like economics and support that go into these decisions. Just as a final thought, how do you talk to folks about this decision going forward, knowing all of these things, that climate change is a reality, that there is a housing crisis, but at the same time that there is, you know, many, all these positive things that come into your life if you do choose to have children? How do you have that conversation with somebody? What do you advise them if they are a fence sitter and they're not sure what to do? Dana, would you maybe start us off and we'll go all around?
Sure. I think one thing that I think a lot about is just the culture in the United States of individualism and feeling like we have to be able to do everything on our own. And that's not what we were meant to do. And so really, I wouldn't say I'm as much in the business of telling people whether they should have kids or not, or convincing them. I think that's up to individuals. And once they do make that decision, I think making sure they're investing in having community and other people to show up for them is really important. Somebody that can, you know, pick up your kid from school when you can't, or the person that can be there with your first kiddo when you go to the hospital to have your second, like having those concrete supports, those people that you can call on is really important. So I would be more on the line of helping people think about what's important if they do make the decision to have kids. In this culture, often it's they're thinking about like, what do I need? What's the stroller that I need? And how do I make sure I'm prepared for childbirth? But really, like, there's not a lot of preparation for what to do when you get to the other side of that. And so that's where I would be, advising folks to just be thinking about that and making sure they're building in a good support network.
Amy Blackstone, how do you advise people to approach this question?
So I share Dana's position of not really being in the business of convincing people to make one decision or another, but instead being in the position of welcoming people to ask questions of me if they're interested, and encouraging people to go into whatever decision they make with eyes wide open. So talking with friends and family about their experiences, doing the research, you know, learning about what their experience may be. I want to take you to task a little bit, Libby, on one thing you said, and I'll just say that positive things can come into your life with kids and without kids. Mm-hmm. And one thing I say all the time that I have come to realize is that I do imagine that I could have had a really fun and fulfilling life as a parent. And I've also had a really fun and fulfilling life as a non-parent. And I simply, like everyone, can't have it all. So I'm happy with the life that I'm living. And I bet that that could have been true had I chosen a different path. I also grew up in a world where only one path seemed like an option. And what I love about conversations like the one we're having now is that people who are at the point of thinking about this decision now have access to these kinds of conversations. And I didn't when I was 17, 25, and then 35. That's wonderful. I think the more that people understand that they have a choice either way is great.
Yeah, the fact that we are more and more able to tackle these questions. Although I will say, I can hear my mother's voice in my head saying, I had the same questions when I was your age, and you think you guys are all new, you millennials or whatever. But, you know, of course, people have been tackling this for a long time. But more and more, I think there is choice available to people, and they are making, you know, different choices that are, you know, varied and right for them. Stefan, before we go, final thoughts here as you are, you know, potentially helping somebody, if you would advise them how to navigate the question of whether to have kids, what would you advise them to do?
I've really enjoyed this conversation, and there's a part of my brain that has been thinking about what it would have been like to not have had a child. Last week, I was with my kid. We were enjoying spring break together. We frequently, just the two of us, go on spring break and travel the world, you know, see lots of different sites. And as she is growing up, it's just wonderful to have adult conversations. But this conversation has had me think a little bit about a different choice that I could have made. And when you started the conversation, you know, I wasn't sure that I wanted to have a child. It really was a choice that could have gone one way or the other. I'm grateful that it did go the direction that it did. It's the best thing that I've ever done in my life. But I think it is so critical that we as a society, for those that choose to have children, have the pieces in place so that they can have a real childhood and that they can move towards what their potential offers them. And, too frequently in this society, and I don't think we've discussed it enough, that there aren't the supports that are in place. And so some people are making choices to have children, and then they can pull together all the resources that are necessary. And lots of people are having children and then discovering that they don't have the resources. And so you see the number of women that are participating in the workplace, that number has gone down pretty substantially as a result of the pandemic because there's not adequate childcare. And those are the types of things I wonder what happens in that household when someone's chosen to have a child and then there aren't adequate supports. What that means for the mother, what it means for the child, and what it means for our broader society. Those are the things that I think make unfair choices where someone's making a choice not because what their hopes and aspirations tell them to do, but the deficits that are in society that are forcing a choice one way or another. I think that's the thing that we really have to address.
Yeah, and we haven't gotten a chance. We're running out of time here to address the motherhood penalty in the workplace because the parity in salaries and what people make have mostly evened up until a woman decides to or a person decides to have a child. But that's for another day. I so thank you everybody for participating in this conversation. Dr. Stefan Blanford is the director of Children's Alliance. Dr. Amy Blackstone is a sociology professor at the University of Maine and the author of Child Free by Choice. And Dana Guy is the Executive Director of Program for Early Parent Support, or PEPS, in Seattle. Everybody, thank you so much and have a wonderful rest of your day. I really appreciate the conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
Thanks for listening to Soundside. Don't forget you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime right here online at KUOW.org. Or, of course, on your favorite podcast app.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.